Think about the last time you watched someone fail upward, someone who stumbled into success not through talent or hard work, but simply by showing up with the right skin color and gender. Now, multiply that frustration by every institution in America, and you'll start to understand the machinery that props up white male mediocrity while demanding perfection from everyone else. Here's the uncomfortable truth. We've built an entire society around the idea that being a white man is itself an achievement. No resume needed, no proof of competence required. Just exist, and the world assumes you're destined for greatness. Meanwhile, women and people of color run a marathon in weighted vests, proving themselves exceptional before anyone considers them merely equal. This isn't an accident of history. It's a carefully maintained system that rewards the unearned while punishing the deserving. Picture a middle-aged man in a Disney shirt, never having fired a gun outside video games, convinced he needs an arsenal against imaginary threats. This is American cowboy mythology, turning ordinary men into heroes of fictional westerns. Buffalo Bill Cody built an empire on this fantasy, performing theatrical revenge shows where he scalped native chiefs, conveniently ignoring that European colonizers had practiced scalping for centuries and paid bounties for native scalps. Cody slaughtered over 4,000 buffalo in 18 months, transforming hunting into genocide. President Grant's generals understood, remove the buffalo, remove the Indians. Theodore Roosevelt embodied this transformation from scrawny dandy to muscular frontier hero. His obsession with white male physical supremacy led him to claim tens of millions of acres from native peoples for national parks, what native scholars call an illegal, unconsented-to land grab. The modern version appeared in 2016 when the Bundy family led an armed takeover of Oregon's Malheur Wildlife Refuge, claiming federal land ownership violated the Constitution. Despite armed standoffs, they were acquitted. Lost in this battle between white men, neither ranchers nor the federal government has legitimate claim to lands belonging to the Paiute nations for centuries. Self-proclaimed allies often center themselves and abandon movements when inconvenient. Early male feminists Max Eastman and Floyd Dell exemplified this, arguing men needed women's liberation to access intelligent, beautiful, highly sexual women without commitment. Eastman's Men's League for Woman's Suffrage required members only to exist, not act. Both eventually abandoned feminism, Dell for traditional marriage, Eastman's for anti-communist crusades. Joe Biden's evolution on school busing reveals this dynamic. Initially supporting integration, he pivoted when white Delaware constituents revolted, partnering with segregationists on anti-busing legislation. Biden claimed busing was bankrupt and would make non-racist whites hate black people, legitimizing white liberal resistance while securing re-election. When busing ended, his promised better solutions never materialized. Schools rapidly resegregated with massive funding disparities. The Bernie Bros phenomenon showed progressive movements harbor similar blindness. Black staffers were sidelined, women experienced harassment and 50% pay disparities, and Sanders consistently prioritized class over race, dismissing racial justice as distraction from bread and butter issues. When asked about reparations, he deflected to poverty affecting all races. This wasn't violent supremacy, but privileged blindness maintaining oppression through neglect. In 2015, Princeton students occupied Nassau Hall for 36 hours, demanding removal of Woodrow Wilson's name from the School of Public Policy. As Princeton's president, Wilson blocked black student admission, then as U.S. president, dismantled Reconstruction integration, fired black supervisors, and defended the Klan. Harvard's president implemented admissions criteria to limit Jewish enrollment. Princeton's Carl Brigham developed the SAT based on eugenics theories, though he later admitted it merely tested English fluency and familiarity with white culture. Women's studies and ethnic studies departments emerged only after student protests in 1969 and 1970. By 2017, 58% of Republicans viewed colleges negatively, up from 37% 2 years earlier. Republican rhetoric blamed colleges for indoctrinating students with liberal values and offering expensive degrees in impractical fields. Yet state funding cuts caused tuition increases. States spent 10% less per student in 2017 than 2007. The 2016 election revealed stark divides. 71% of white men without college degrees voted for Trump. College exposes students to diversity while providing foundational knowledge about political and economic systems. The war on higher education aims to ensure working-class people don't question systems exploiting them, targeting the angry white working-class man as white supremacy's most powerful tool. America's paradox. The country wouldn't exist without people of color, yet many white Americans actively sought them out to express hatred. After the Civil War, white Southerners feared living alongside newly emancipated Black Americans, yet couldn't imagine living without them. When World War I created Northern labor shortages, Black Southerners found factory jobs paying six times their Southern wages. Despite desperate attempts to prevent their departure, cutting wages, refusing to cash paychecks, arresting travelers, over 1 million Black Americans fled North between 1916 to 1930. The South's insistence on white supremacy over economic progress left a devastating legacy. 8 of America's 10 poorest states are in the South. The South fought a war to keep Black labor, but destroyed itself because it couldn't imagine treating Black people as equals. The summer of 1919, Red Summer, saw anti-Black riots in approximately 25 cities. In Chicago, 17-year-old Eugene Williams was deliberately drowned for crossing the beach segregation line. Police refused to arrest the perpetrator, igniting violence that left 38 dead, 520 injured, and 1,000 Black families homeless. Housing discrimination intensified. Racist covenants banned non-white residents from 80% of properties in cities like Chicago and Los Angeles by 1940. When George Wallace ran for president in 1968, he replaced dangers of integration with law and order and fighting school busing. Nixon adopted the Southern strategy, using coded language to signal protection of white supremacy, teaching future presidents that mobilizing the white working class required reinforcing their power over communities of color. In October 2015, when University of Missouri graduate student Jonathan Butler began a hunger strike after racist incidents, 30 Black football players refused to play, supported by white teammates and coach Gary Pinkle. President Tim Wolfe resigned within 72 hours, not from moral conviction, but because the university faced millions in losses. In 2016, Colin Kaepernick began kneeling during the national anthem to protest police brutality. After consulting a military veteran, he chose kneeling as respectful protest and pledged $1 million to charity. Despite this, Donald Trump weaponized the protests to stoke white racial anxiety. After the 2016 season, Kaepernick went unsigned despite staying in top form, revealing how America expects Black athletes to shut up and play while benefiting from their labor. The August 2019 El Paso shooting, where a white gunman killed 22 people targeting Mexicans, exposed the darkness of white male identity. White men have been promised fulfillment and power, but feel empty inside, lacking intrinsic self-worth. This creates desolate loneliness where they can only relate through conquest and competition. We must reimagine white manhood based on empathy and cooperation. White manhood stands at the edge of disaster with a gun in its hands, manifesting in terrorism, self-harm, and environmental destruction. The challenge isn't simply dismantling white male supremacy, but creating something better, manhood valuing connection over domination.